Accession number 21065, Rule 1.
Colonel Jenkins, Rule 1, where were you born, please?
A little village called Meliden, up in North Wales, near a bigger town called Prestatyn.
Which year was this?
1927.
Did your parents come from this same area?
No, my father was a Devonshire man, born in Totnes. The family lived in Newton Abbot. I suppose we're all Western Celts. His father ran a sort of grocery business in Newton Abbot. My mother's people came from the Potteries, and her father had retired to Prestatyn, and that's where she had settled.
Did you grow up and have your schooling in North Wales?
Yes, I did. In the county school there, Real County School, which eventually became Real Grammar School.
How old were you when you finished at Real County School?
I was 17. This was the end of the war, 1944. We had been prepared to go into the services, obviously. I'd applied for the Y scheme. I wanted to be a pilot. But at that time, they got so many potential pilots that they'd stopped the courses. This was a training in Canada. And I was rather at a loose end, and a friend of mine came to me one day and said, why don't you think of going into the Indian Army? There are things called Indian Army cadetships. So I applied, and I had an interview in Chester with a retired colonel from the Indian Army, and then I went down to London with another Brigadier Ponting, and eventually on the 8th of March 1945, I went into the Indian Army Holding Company in Maidstone, which was based on the Queen's Royal Regiment. They were the acting first of the line. The Royal Scots had become mechanised, so the Queen's Royal Regiment, who was second in the line, became the foster father of the Indian Army Holding Regiment. This was in Maidstone in Kent.
What's happened to you at Maidstone?
Well, we spent 6 weeks on primary training first, and then we were only there for a few months. This was drill training, handling of weapons, route marches, those sort of things, IS drills. We were really preparing. The war was still on. VE Day was celebrated whilst we were there, in fact. But there was still a war in Japan, and we were destined to go out to the Indian Army. So we were very much training in tactics, and it was platoon training, really.
What did the VE Day celebrations consist of?
Well, as far as I was concerned, it was a trip to London to join the crowds there. But it was very unfortunate because some of us in our platoon had bought the rather fancy hats that the Queen's Royal Regiment had, their dress hats. And others hadn't. And when we all formed up in the morning to go up to London, the Sergeant Major had to select a number of the cadets there to help decorate the mess for the function in the evening for the officers and warrant officers. And he just selected the people by saying, those with the fancy hats, fall out, you're on fatigue duty. So we spent the first 3 hours, I suppose, the next 3 hours of the morning, working in the officers and sergeants' mess, decorating. But we did get away at about 2 PM up to London, where we joined the crowds in celebration. That was my VE Day.
Whereabouts in London was that?
This was in around the palace, the Queen Victoria statue there at the end of the Mall.
Were the crowds well behaved?
Oh, yes. Yes. As far as I remember. A long time ago.
What were these fancy hats that the Queen's Royal Regiment?
Well, they're just the fore and aft, the forage caps we used to call them. But they were coloured in the regimental colours. And they were recognised military wear. They weren't something odd. But they were different from the rather drab khaki that we were training in.
What are the regimental colours?
Now this is the Queen's Royal Regiment, which I wasn't a member of. They were only holding us, I think. They were sepia and blue, something like that, but I can't remember.
What do you remember happening next at Medicine?
Well, not a lot. We were training hard. We were all looking forward to getting off to India. We were due to sail, I think it was in the September, and we'd only been there since the March. So there wasn't a lot happening. We were doing a lot of physical exercise, PT, route marches, trying to get ourselves, I suppose, fit for India. Our officers, in fact, were officers of the Indian Army, looked after us in the holding company, who'd all been wounded, and they were back in England, and they'd obviously been to hospital and were recuperating. Company commander, I remember extremely well, was a Major Arkell, one of the Beer families from the Lambourne area, Newbury. And he'd got a double MC in Burma, was a much respected officer. Unfortunately, he died later in Java from severe wounds when he went back to service.
How did all of these people behave towards the cadets?
They were, I mean, we were... They're students, I suppose, in a way. They looked after us extremely well. They were tough on us, but they trained us well, and we respected them very much indeed.
Were they giving you any advice at that time about what an Indian Army officer should do?
Yes, we did have lectures from them on what the Indian Army was and a bit about its history and how its relations with the British Army. And of course the British Army had spent a lot of time in India anyway in their training over many, many years. It was a good training ground for the British Army. And most of the officers who went to the Indian Army did in fact spend a year with the British Battalion in India before they went. But they gave us as much as they could of their experience as to what we should expect when we joined our regiments.
And then you went off to India?
Yes, we went off, I think it was about September 1945. We sailed on the Johan van Olden Barnevelt from London and Tilbury to Bombay. I've forgotten how long we took, about 11 days, I suppose, something of that order, through the Med and the Suez Canal. We were all in hammocks below decks. If one person started swinging at one end of the mess deck, everybody swung. They were that close together. When we got into the warmer weather, a lot of us elected to sleep on deck. It was cooler and less crowded, obviously. But our hammocks were slung over our what was our mess room. We had tables. Well, they were fixtures to the floor, benches, I suppose, benches and tables, fixtures in the mess room, and the hammocks were slung above them so that as you swung, you were only just clearing the tables that you had had your supper on previously. But it was exciting. We were all very young. I was, just 18 in the June, and this was the August.
Where did you arrive in India?
We arrived in Bombay, and I think we spent a night there. Whether it was in the world-famous Deol Alley, I don't know, I can't remember. But eventually we went by troop train to the place where we were going to do our commissioning training, which was Bangalore, the officers' training school in Bangalore, which is way down in the Nilgiris in southern India.
What kind of impression had India made on you on arrival and on the train journey?
Oh, what a difficult question. It was a lot of people hanging onto the side of trains, a lot of poverty, a lot of beggars. We were a group together, I suppose almost isolated in our transportation down to Bangalore. We weren't moving around freely in a foreign country. We were an organized group, and probably true to say, I don't suppose I spoke to an Indian at all in that period of time.
What happened to you in Bangalore?
Well, Bangalore was where we were all trained. There were about three officer training establishments in India. There was one at Mau, there was one at Dehradun, and the one at Bangalore. It was on the Agaram Plain. It had been functioning almost throughout the war, providing officers for the Indian Army. We arrived there in probably late September, early October, and we were there until we were commissioned in the following April, in April 1946.
What did you think of the training you got at Bangalore?
Well, the training was excellent. We were obviously, when we left England, we were being trained for reinforcements for the Japanese war. But it was whilst we were approaching Bombay on the ship, in fact, that there was VJ Day, the victory in Japan. So there was no longer any thoughts of going to war against the Japanese. That was all over. But the training obviously didn't change very much. We were still doing our basic tactical skill drills and weapon drills. We were internal security, I think, was there was more emphasis on that than anything else. You had your platoon drills with your photographers and buglers and training to hopefully help the police in maintaining civil order in the event of any disturbances. I suppose at that time the thought of India becoming independent was very much in people's minds and what that might bring. I mean, we're talking about April 46, and it was only a year before, what was it, August 47, independence in India. So that must have been in people's minds about the police might have needed some assistance from the military.
Had you seen any civil disturbances at that time?
None at all. It was Bangalore was a very civilized place. It was one of the old Raj Hill stations in India. Just above Bangalore there was Utikamund, Uti as everybody knew it, which was a favorite hill station for the Indian civil service. There was a duty club where I think the first game of billiards or snooker in the world was ever played. Bangalore itself was a beautifully laid out town. We used to go out on the weekend, on Saturday, to the, I've forgotten, I think it was called the Huanan restaurant. We used to go in rickshaws, have a dinner there, a rickshaw race on the way back to the camp, to the training school. It was all very civilized, very pleasant. And of course we made friends there amongst our group that are lifelong. I still have very close friendships with 14 or 15 people who were with us in that platoon in 1946.
Then?
Well, after we had completed our training, we had our big commissioning parade, and we were all commissioned into British regiments. You couldn't be directly commissioned into the Indian Army at that stage. The fact that we were destined for the Indian Army really didn't affect that. We were commissioned into British regiments. I was commissioned into the Green Howards, who I had never served with. And I had no real reason to select the Green Howards, the Yorkshire Regiment, as my choice, but somebody must have suggested it. But I was destined for the 1st Gurkha Rifles. That had been my choice. A friend of mine who served with me, he had relations in the 1st Gurkha Rifles, and I had selected that as my Indian Army Regiment. But we had the whole choice of all the 10 as there were then, 10 Gurkha rifle regiments and all the regiments of the Indian Army.
Why did you pick the Gurkhas?
I think, going back to what I said, when I right back at school, when this friend of mine said, why don't you go into the Indian Army, try the Indian Army Holding Company, he was going into the Gurkhas. And he had mentioned their wonderful war record, and from that moment on, I had decided to follow in his footsteps and go into the Gurkhas. And then when I struck up this particular friendship with this other person in the platoon, and he had relations that had been in the first Gurkhas, it was just to reinforce the decision.
What happened next?
Well, after we were commissioned, end of April, about three of us were all commissioned into the first Gurkhas, and we had to go to their regimental depot, regimental centre as they were called. And the regimental centre of the first Gurkhas was in Dharamsala, up in northwest India, where the Dalai Lama at the moment lives. But that was the regimental centre of the first Gurkha Rifles in the Kangra Valley. About just over 6,000 feet, and we went there at a time when there were no battalions actually stationed in the centre. There was the resident sort of administrative organisation, but the other battalions were coming back from the war. Each Gurkha regiment had about five active battalions during the war, mainly the 3rd and 4th battalion and 5th battalions were the ones that were still in the active zones, and they were coming back into the depot to be disbanded, basically, for regiments to return to their pre-war two battalion status. But Dharamsala itself was the most wonderful place to go as a young man. You had this rambling mess. We were spent a lot of time sitting on verandas doing with our munshi, learning Gurkhali. We had had Urdu training in Bangalore, but we were trained to learning Gurkhali with our munshis. We had tubs for baths, hurricane lamps for lighting. It was a lovely old mess, a lot of silver. The first Gurkhas, in fact, had been formed in 1815, so it was a regiment with considerable history, and a lot of that history was depicted in the mess.
Any other memories from this time?
Well, I suppose the domestic scene, the mess was organized with a lot of officers that you didn't speak to. You had this senior subaltern was a person of very very powerful position. There were probably 25 or 30 subalterns in the center. Some like ourselves had just come out of officer training school, others were coming back with their battalions from war service. And the senior subaltern was in charge of controlling the subalterns, making sure that they didn't misbehave on guest nights, and if they did, holding summary court-martials, subalterns' court-martials, which was great fun. And
did they actually occur?
Oh, indeed, yes, yes. We had an odd summary court-martial, one or two subalterns going a bit wild on mess nights, doing things they shouldn't do. I suppose the period at the end of the war, everybody was celebrating in a way. The mess was a riotous place to be in the evenings after guest nights. I mean, people were climbing over the roof and going out of one window and coming in another. It was that sort of atmosphere. It was serious work during the day, but at guest nights in the evenings, it got quite riotous.
Were they doing damage?
A certain amount of damage, I suppose, was inevitable, but I wouldn't have said it was really of any real consequence.
You didn't appear before a court martial yourself?
I didn't, no. I was a model of good behaviour at the time. But I remember the Khitmatgars, we had Punjabi servants, in fact, who served a table, and they were very splendid in their long green coats and white turbans with the regimental colours in a band around the hats. And the other people I remember very well were the people who cut your hair, because they invariably finished up with this rather splendid Indian head massage, of slapping of hands across the head and giving you a good sort of massage. These are little things. There was a squash courts. There were squash courts in the grounds. People played squash. A number of people went out shooting. And of course, being at that height, there was ample opportunity to walk in the hills. A lot of people started their mountaineering interests in Dharamsala. There was a nice bazaar there. There was St. John's in the Wilderness, a church, which people, a number of my friends were married there. It was a hill station with ladies present. There was a tennis club. A very pleasant social life.
How long did this go on for about?
Well, it had been going on, I suppose, since the 100 years or whatever, since 1815. But I was only there from joining in the end of April 46 until about September. I went down to a camp just below Dharamsala in the plains called Tunda Camp, which received the remnants of the 2nd 1st coming back from Malaya. Our 2nd Battalion, 2nd 1st, had been taken prisoner in Malaya. And they came back, and I was, as a subaltern, was sent down to look after the administration of this camp, a tented camp, in the plains. And the 2nd 1st came back and moved into this camp to reorganize, get themselves reinforced and re-equipped. And then they went off to Peshawar, up in the on the frontier, to join the new 2nd 1st. So the old 2nd 1st joined the new 2nd 1st. And that's what I did until, I've forgotten how long it was, this September, early October. And at that stage, I was posted to the 1st Battalion of the regiment, which was down in Nagpur in Central Provinces. They were involved in internal security duties at that time. I went down there. I was made the IO of the battalion, the intelligence officer. We were on an airstrip called Sonigaon, which was some miles, I think, east of Nagpur. And we were really doing recces of the area. I think I'm right in saying is that Gandhi's birthplace, a place called Chanda, was not too far away. And I remember one of my tasks was to go by motorcycle to recce the area around Chanda. Again, I suppose it was the thought of independence and whether there might have been any troubles in the area that all battalions of the Indian Army were looking at their areas of responsibility to see where trouble spots might have arisen.
So you were taking patrols of Gurkhas out?
No, I wasn't actually, not as an IO. I was on my own on a motorbike and just driving around the countryside, going to various places and then coming back and making little pencil sketches, maps of the area, routes to and from places which one thought might have been a possible trouble spot. It was really looking at roads and access routes. That was my particular role. Other people, of course, were training, again, on IS drills with their companies. But my role was very much as an individual.
What was the demeanour of the population in that area towards you at that time?
Oh, perfectly friendly. We didn't have a lot of social life. In fact, I'd say we didn't have any social life with the local population, but they were all around us. We were living in a camp which was in a populated area. And there was never any trouble at all. Perfectly normal service life in a sort of camp in a civilian community. But we were there until, I was there until November, and then we were told that we were going up to the northwest frontier. Now this was desperately exciting for an 18-year-old, and I was sent as there were two of us on the advance party. There was a second in command, Major Bobby Clark, and I went as his sidekick. I was the subaltern with him. So we left Nagpur and travelled by train up through Amritsar and across Lucky Mawat and into Banu, and which is the railhead for the northwest frontier for Waziristan. And then we took a truck, I think it's about 70 miles to the west of Banu, into the northwest frontier province, and up to Razmak. Razmak is a walled fort, a low walled fort, up at about 7,000 feet, housing, I think, six battalions, the Indian Army. It had, of course, in previous years, had British Army regiments. So Razmak, a very famous sort of place to be. And the first, as we were representing then, were moving up there, taking over from the 5th, 2nd Gurkhas. And just the two of us, and a couple of batmen, and I think a few representatives of the quartermaster's department, went up there as the advance party. That's what we were doing. And we arrived at the railhead Banu. We had to stay there for a day or so, and then the long, dusty road journey, winding road up to Razmak, through various military posts. The frontier, Waziristan, was policed in a way by various scout organizations. There were the South Waziristan Scouts, the Toshi Scouts, I've forgotten all the names, but they were officered by British and Indian officers, dressed as the men did in pugris and chaplies and long grey coats and all armed, and moved around the northwest frontier where everybody was armed. Every villager carried a rifle. And we went through there, as we moved from Banu up to Razmak, we went through their various posts, Mirin Shah, and then at Gardai, and then we climbed up to the Razmak Narai from the lower reaches, and Razmak was on this plateau at about 7,000 feet. And all male, six battalions. We were taking over, as I said, from the 5th, 2nd. Their Gurkha major, their Subedar major, as they were then, was Lal Bahadur, who won a VC in Africa, a very distinguished soldier. And he was the Subedar major of the battalion. But the other battalions there were, there was a battalion of Rajputs, there was the 1st 14th Punjabs, the 15th 16th Punjabs, the 13th Frontier Force Rifles, the Baluch Regiment. Six battalions, and a lot of gunner support. They had 5.5-inch guns and 3.7 mountain howitzers. We had hundreds of mules. That was the transport up there. Signalers. For a young man of 18, it was a desperately exciting place to be.
What's happened to you next?
Well, of course, Razmak itself was. We were there for a year, and our job in Razmak was not just to sit in this fort; it was to open up the road as far as the Razmak Narai. I don't know how long that was, about 28 miles, I suppose. And we used to go out about once or twice a week and open the road. That was how it was described.
What's a Narai?
Razmak Narai. A Narai is a sort of I don't know. I think it's a break it's like a not a cliff face because there's a road running down it, but it's an escarpment, I think probably is the best way to call it. And that was at the same height as Razmak, and then the land dropped away to Gardai and the other stations below. But in the We used to go out about once a week or twice a week, and what they described it as opening the road. You would go out and you'd picket the hills on each side of the road, send up platoon strength pickets all the way up to the Resnet and Rye, where we used to stop.